हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। ओके सो परमात्म संदर्भ अध्याय 4 अधिकरण 1 जीवस एंटेंगलमेंट एंड लिबरेशन Page 20. Then the passage says, Sama Vishama Matinam Matam Anu Sarasi Yata Raju Kandas Sarpadi Diyam. You accept the opinion of those who say that Bhagavan is the Brahman with material variety, Vishama, though they are actually two aspects of one form, sama. However, this opinion is like thinking a rope is a snake. The meaning is, you appear in this way to people of high and low consciousness. In Srimad Bhagavatam 6.9.34, asharira means without bodily activities. Asharana means without the shelter of earth, etc. Even in verse 35, although the Lord is inferred to be neutral, it should be understood that he is an agent. The prominence of his Swarup Shakti is shown. Yeah, so we see that the Lord, he's appearing in these different forms for the different personalities, depending upon the level of their consciousness. Right, so those who can appreciate him as Bhagavan will see Bhagavan. Those who don't, they will see him as Paramatma or Brahman, or just as the material energy, maybe the universal form at best, and then the material energy. So however the living entity is seeing the Lord, that's how he reciprocates. Right? Because the point is, everything being him, everybody is interacting only with Krishna. They're not interacting with anyone else, right? It's all Krishna through his energies. And so then when someone, whatever their value is in what they're dealing with, it's Krishna. And then when they see that in connection with Krishna, then Krishna interacts with them personally. Then when he doesn't, when they don't see Krishna involved, as a person, then he interacts with them according to the level that they see either him or not see him. Right. So that's the thing, is that Jiva, he's entangled, but the Lord isn't, because it's all him. How can he get entangled? It's him already. Right. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.34, right? By showing that Maya is like a shadow, indicates that the Lord is untouched by Maya. This is understood from the following. You are the original Lord, the controller beyond material nature. You are situated in your spiritual form, being one with your spiritual energy and separate from the material energy. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.23. Maya parait jabhi mukhe cha vilajamana. Maya, being ashamed, cannot stand before the Lord. Somehow it just says B, 2747. Is that Srimad Bhagavatam? Is that Brahma Sutras? Is that... No? Okay. Thus, the idea that the Lord acts against the jiva is rejected. Jiva's relationship with avidya results from the Lord's maya, which has been shown to be inconceivable. by Maya, the Jiva, Vimuktasya, who has the ability to realize his Sarup, Ishwarasya, has his knowledge of Atma covered, Karpanyam, and enters the net of gunas previously shown, Bandhanam. It is said, Tad Sangha Brahm Shitaishwaryam. The Jiva in association with Maya loses all its powers. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.5.15. Udriti. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura elaborates on the susceptible condition of the Jiva as follows. Oh, one more time. A bit more forward. Okay, that's the story. Vrajana. Respected Master, I have now understood that the eternal form of the Jiva is atomic, chit, and that his limbs, features, and nature are all sublime and beautiful. In the conditioned state of the Jiva, the Linga Sharir veils his beautiful form. Thus, the gross material covering completely corrupts and perverts the original and actual identity of the Jiva. Is the Jiva in his Mukta Avastha, emancipated condition, completely flawless? Raghunathas Babaji. Since he is the atomic part and parcel of Sri Krishna, the spiritual form of the Jiva is certainly faultless, but incomplete because of the vulnerability of his extremely diminutive size. Thus, the only discernible weakness in his faultless condition is that in a close encounter with the powerful Maya Shakti, his spiritual nature can be eclipsed and concealed. The Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32 describes this as follows. O lotus-eyed one, those who think they are liberated in this life, but do not render devotional service to you, must be of impure intelligence. Although they accept severe austerities and penances and rise to the spiritual position, to impersonal Brahman realization, they fall down again because they neglect to worship your lotus feet. Therefore, we see that however elevated a person a position a liberated soul may attain, his dependent constitution remains permanent. This is, in fact, the definition of the Jiva Tattva. Therefore, the Vedas reiterate that Bhagavan is the Lord of Maya, and that the Jiva is, in all situations, susceptible to the subjugation of Maya, being the Tathasta Shakti. Jiva Dharma, chapter 15. The Shrutis also indicate this in their prayers. The Jiva Jiva contacts matter by the influence of Maya, takes on similar form due to upadis, and enjoys material objects. He thus experiences samsara. You, however, avoid the material energy in the same way that a snake abandons its old skin. Glorious in your position of eight mystic powers, you display unlimited greatness. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.36. By saying that the old by saying that the Lord possesses Maya, Bhagavata Maya, it is understood that the Lord is devoid of Maya. Similarly, the phrase Maya of Indra means Indra is in control of illusion. Previous statements can be understood in the same way. Riti. Having established that the Lord doesn't get affected by the modes, the next Anucheda answers, what is the cause of the Jiva's conditioning? Maitreya Muni describes that the suffering and bondage of the Jiva is caused by the Maya Shakti, who covers the Jiva's knowledge and makes him experience the illusory pain, just as one may experience miseries in a dream. Right. So when these explanations go on, there's a particular point that's being made, but it doesn't mean that other points aren't being engaged in this explanation. Then in another explanation, when you start talking about, let's say, the Jiva, it doesn't mean that all those same explanations about the Lord aren't going to be there. Like if you're trying to establish that the Lord is unaffected by material energy, you may be showing how the jiva is affected and how the Lord is not, right? Then when you're showing, making the point about the Lord being unaffected by material energy, then you may be explaining how the jiva is. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of where the emphasis is. That's why it appears that some things are, you know, the different verses, the different points are being repeated, but actually they're being repeated from a different perspective. This is the meaning of vichar. You're seeing things from different angles. Anucheda 91. That the jiva does not actually have misery and bondage, but only appears to have this by the Lord's maya, is this illustrated with an example. Yadartena vina mushya pumsam atma viparyaya pratiyata upadrashtu svashiras chedanadika. Because of maya, the jiva's loss of knowledge and bliss makes its appearance without cause or purpose. It is similar to the seer of a dream experiencing his head being cut off. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.7.10. Right, so the jiva, he has his own powers, but they become eclipsed. It doesn't mean they're not there. It's just like, let's say you have the stars. When the sun comes out, the stars become eclipsed. It's not that they're not there in the sky. It's just that you can't see them because of the power of the sun. So the same way is that the jiva coming in close proximity of the maya shakti, they can become eclipsed. But that position and those glories are always there. That's why it's actually an illusion that the jiva thinks that they are, you know, the body and all these things, and they identify and therefore they suffer. But as soon as they turn their attention back to the Lord, then all that disappears. That's how it is, because one could say, but they're still in the material energy, they're still small, but now they've taken shelter of the Lord's internal potency. And because of that, then maya becomes eclipsed, because maya is a shadow, right? And Krishna is the sun, right? So sun's always going to remove shadow. But we're so small, we will be covered by either. So the point is, the natural is to be in the sunlight, not to be in the shadow. Right? What was that one? Something to mom. No? We don't know that one? Come from the dark to the light. Asha to mom or something like that. Yeah. Okay. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. Somebody was saying something. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. A teacher in school once threatened his pupil that he would cut off the pupil's head and hang it on a wall so that the children could see how his head had been cut off. The child became frightened and stopped his mischief. Similarly, the miseries of the pure soul and the disruption of his self-identification are managed by the external energy of the Lord, which controls those mischievous living entities who want to go against the will of the Lord. Actually, there is no bondage or misery for the living entity, nor does he ever lose his pure knowledge. In his pure consciousness, when he thinks a little seriously about his position, he can understand that he is eternally subordinate to the mercy of the Supreme, and that his attempt to become one with the Supreme is a false illusion. Right? So that it's explained. That's why you can contemplate about spiritual subject matter and be completely absorbed in it and see it very clearly, because one is just using one's natural spiritual intelligence. One's not using the material. But then if one becomes distracted by maya and starts thinking about mundane things, then now you're using the material intelligence, you know, from the element, the 24 elements. But when you actually contemplate spiritual things for a spiritual purpose, having been heard in the parampara, you're using your actual original intelligence. So that's why he's saying your original knowledge, your original nature, and that is not lost. It's just covered. So it's just uncovering what's already there. So it's a natural thing. So that's why it's for the Acharyas, it's just remember Krishna and all this goes away. We think, oh, that's so simple. You know, no, it has to be some, you know, mechanical technique and all that. And so, no, it's just remembering Krishna. But since whatever we do then makes us think of those things that they're connected to, therefore, then Krishna is very kind. They've given the process of sadhana bhakti, by which we can mechanically go through things. And in that, we're connecting everything to Krishna. And so then we get that benefit. We come step by step towards Krishna. But at the same time, is those activities of sadhana bhakti, those are actually activities of the spiritual world. Right. So the activities of the spiritual world, the nine processes of devotional service, that is the activities of the spiritual world. Right. It's not that they have some other activities. Then, depending upon the mood in which you see the Lord in majesty, sweetness, or a combination, then you're going to perform those activities with a specific, you know, flavor or environment. And so that's what gives you the different realms of the Lord. But it's not that it's some other process, you know, like we were discussing the other day in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's not that it's a different process like the Sahajiyas would like to lead us to believe. Because if it's a different process, then that it's they have the connection with that. If it's just the same thing but change the mentality, then, you know, we don't require this new process. So the things is that like the devotees in the spiritual world, they're all surrendered to Krishna. And so therefore, then what we're asked to do is surrender to Krishna. The devotees in Vrindavan, they perform all their occupational duties just to please Krishna. Right? Nanda Baba manages Vrindavan and the cows. The coward boys are taking out cows. Mother Choda is doing her things. You know, everybody has it. But, and here we're being asked, whatever is your duties, do it for Krishna. Right? There it's whatever situation you're in, depending on your relationship with Krishna, then you perform those duties in connection with Krishna, therefore all the ashram aspect. And so that's what they do. And we're asked to do the same thing. Right? So factually, we're being offered to do all the activities they do in the spiritual world, and try to develop the mentality that they have in the spiritual world. And it's so perfect because it's the natural position, right? If it's not the natural position, then that's going to be a difficulty. You may have to do all kinds of things to cultivate that unnatural position. But since it's natural, all you have to do is start acting like you do in the spiritual world with the spiritual mentality. And then you're situated back on the spiritual platform. It's actually that simple, right? And so what is the difficulty? Is that our conditioning that we're so used to or practiced in the idea that I'm the body and all these things and identify with it and I have all these values in these things, that therefore I can't see how, you know, it's just so far away, when actually it's just that simple. When Prabhupada says, just chant, dance, take prasad, like that, and then, you know, distribute that to others. It's literally that simple. People go, no, it's much more complex. That's simplistic. No, it's not. It's that simple. Right? Because what they do is they make all the technical details to be the prominence, and not actually the real substance, right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say I have a can of pickles, right? And so then the point is you want to, use pickles in a preparation, so you get them out of the can, Haribol, right? Isn't it? It's about the preparation and about then offering to Krishna and the devotees eating and all that. Yes? So that's the whole point. But then there is the mentality that no, it's not so simple. Why you're making it so simplistic? I mean, it's a can, you know, and it's made out of tin and it's this and that, and it's got this much thickness to it. And so therefore we're going to need a can opener like this not one of these cheapo things, you know, because those always break and all that. And so you need this other one that's more soft than that. And then you put that on there. And then if you use the right pressure and everything, and then you turn with the right thing, and you have to keep turning in the same direction, not too fast, not too slow, and all this and that. And besides that, until you get all the way around and then it open, then when it does, you know, connect, then you have that lid thing there, and then that'll pop up. And then it's very sharp, you know, and it's got pointy things, you know, like that. So you're going to have to be very careful. So either you put your fingers around like this and grab and make sure it's already clicked back, or, you know, you might use a fork or something and get it, or something else, or use a kitchen cloth and pull like this. Make sure you don't cut yourself, so you can't just put it down everywhere. You know, it should be like thrown out or put into a place where all these things go and all the things like that. And besides that, then, you know, this is the main thing, but it can solve that. It also is that because there's a better, another kind of can opener where it doesn't cut from the top and then make that little things pop up. It actually cuts at the side and just cuts the whole thing off. So then you don't really have that problem on the top of that. But now you have another problem, is that the edge of the can, the whole thing's sharp, but the lid's not so sharp unless you get it on the bottom and all that. So then you also have to consider that. But now the easy thing is you just take that and you pour that out into your bowl like that and things like that. But then, of course, if you only want to use part of it, then, you know, don't use your fingers, because you might get, you know, get yourself a fork and get in there and then pull out how many things you need like that. And then, you know, like this. And you understand? This is management. In other words, they take something so simple and make it into this big, huge thing, and because you just keep going on it. This is the material consciousness. We take, oh no, but I'm money, I this and that. Oh, my home is all this and that. So that's the whole thing. Management means you're manipulating the material nature. So we take that and we apply that in all of our places of attachment. And then we say, no, no, it's not so simple like you say, just chant Hare Krishna and all that, when it actually, no, it is that simple. But because we're so used to it, the mechanics of each and every step of the mechanics has to be dealt with and all that. And that's what Jiva Goswami so expertly does. And then we'll say, no, no, but you're just repeating the things from different angles. I didn't just do that, explaining the opening of the tin. Now, if you have someone who's new in that, not, you wouldn't have to tell them all that. Of course you would tell them all that. You're going to repeat it from so many angles. You're going to do this. You're going to practice. So that's the point, is that we take something so straightforward as the natural position of the soul in the relationship with the Lord and make it complicated. So when we say it's difficult, it's the process technically is not difficult. It's natural. It's difficult because we make it difficult. So the Lord is so kind that he addresses that difficulty and allows us to see it in a way that we can relate to it in whatever position we're at. Because everything that we're dealing with is Krishna. And so therefore now you're dealing with Krishna and all this. So now if you're opening that can for Krishna and thinking in all the ways that we just discussed, but still you're opening the can for Krishna, it's connected to devotional service. And if you want to focus more on the mechanics of the can and this and that, you can, because it's still engaged in Krishna's service. Because those pickles will be offered to Krishna. You know, and then it'll be honored by the Vaishnavas, and so Krishna's very happy. But now if you're focusing more on doing this nicely for Krishna and all this and making the preps, and all, then it just takes on more sweet. So that's what's happening. It's really, really straightforward like that. So the thing is it's not that, okay, we're here, this is real, and then we're trying to get to another reality. No, that other reality is the reality. We're in that reality, but we see it differently due to Maya, and we think, oh, no, it's not like that. So it's just a matter of becoming aware. So that's the problem, is the material consciousness complicates everything, right? Our conditioning complicates everything. And so Therefore, then we want to appreciate the simplicity of it. Though for our own particular position, we may need to be engaged in a more complicated, more sophisticated position. But the whole idea is we have to understand it's actually just that simple. Right? It's natural. In other words, if it's natural for someone to do something in a particular way, doing it in all these complicated ways doesn't matter. As long as you're getting the effect, okay, it does. But the point is that simple activity can be done. It's natural. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then, yeah. Good. Life after life, the living entity falsely tries to lord it over material nature and become the lord of the material world. But there is no tangible result. At last, when frustrated, he gives up his material activities and tries to become one with the Lord and speculate with much jugglery of words, but without success. Right? So he's trying to enjoy fruitively. That doesn't work. Then he tries to get into liberation, becoming one with the Lord, with the word jugglery. And it won't be successful because it's wrong. The Lord is who he is. It's all explained in the Shastra. And by word juggling, they try to come up with a different meaning. So the fruit of workers coming up with a different meaning means everything's to be used in Krishna's service. And so then we're trying to use it not in Krishna's service, separately than that. So therefore, there's no success. We're frustrated. And then when he decides, okay, this fruit of his nonsense, they throw that out. But now through juggling of words, they try to say that the jiva will be the same as the Lord. And so then either way, there's no success. So one has to give up. That's why then Rupa Goswami is saying pure devotional service means giving up that idea of karma and jnana. These activities are performed under the dictation of the illusory energy. The experience is compared to the experience of one's having his head cut off in a dream. The man whose head has been cut off also sees that his head has been cut off. If a person's head is severed, he loses his power to see. Therefore, if a man sees that his head has been cut off, it means he thinks that he thinks like that in a hallucination. Right? So does that make sense? That if his head's cut off, you can't see anymore. Right? You don't hear anybody in the French history talking about the most annoying thing about sitting in the public square there, watching the program, the entertainment going on with the guillotine, that it's really annoying, all those heads and all the pikes and that hang, around, on everybody's fences there. They keep staring at you, you're just trying to eat lunch and have a good time. But you don't hear anybody say that, right? So Prabhupada's pointing out, since you can see that your head's been cut off, that means it hasn't been cut off. You only think it's been cut off. Right?
Now, can we say that the head can see the rest of the body?
No, but you're seeing the head separately. You're not seeing from the head and going, hey, where's my body? You're seeing your head's cut off. That means you're seeing separately, and this is just like Prabhupada said, a hallucination. It's in a dream. Yes. So that's the thing, is you're seeing yourself in a dream separately from that. So that means you're not what you're seeing. It means you, the identification of I, is seeing what you think is I. So that's the separate point. Similarly, a living entity is eternally subordinate to the Supreme Lord, and he has this knowledge with him. But artificially, he thinks that he is God himself, and that although he is God, he has lost his knowledge due to Maya. This conception has no meaning, right? So he thinks, I'm God, but I have, due to Maya, I've lost this understanding. But actually, no, I'm servant of God, and due to Maya, I've lost this understanding. right? So that I think I'm God, that's already Maya. But they're taking, so in other words, I got myself into the material world by thinking that I'm the enjoyer and controller like God. I want to be that. So in other words, from the beginning, I want to be God. And then Maya then therefore takes over the consciousness of the living entity. But they're thinking, no, it's because I am God. It's due to Maya that I've forgotten I'm God. That's why even if they absorb themselves that I am God and all that and develop so much, they still get no success. There's no satisfaction because the premise on which they're trying to liberate themselves from the material energy is the exact premise that got them into bondage in the first place. Right? They're thinking, oh no, it's because of activity. It's because of, self-identity. It's because of all the different interactions and desires and attachments and endeavors and fruits and all experiences. That's what's causing my illusion. No, it's because you think you're God. That's why you see the karma is actually a little bit closer. Even though it's a lower level of consciousness because they're not understanding that they're the soul and all that, that's not the focus. And they're not so absorbed in the supreme. They're absorbed in their fruit of work. And they accept God, but God's just part of their morality, right? That just their religious point, he's just part of that. But their main goal is sense gratification, right? So then the Mayavadis want to get down to the root, but they make the mistake that what they consider is the solution, that's actually the root to why they're in the material world in the first place. So that's why the Mayavadi never can get proper liberation. You can get something temporary that you come to the point where, okay, all the upadis will go away and you can just think I am God. But you'll never leave the Mahatattva. You'll never leave the material creation because you're still in material consciousness. Does that make sense? So that's why then Lord Chaitanya, the first thing he says when he asks what is the living entity, he points out that the Jiva Sarup is servant of Krishna. That's the Sarup. That's his nature. Everything else is developed from there. So how he sees himself as a servant of Krishna, that's how his particular form, his qualities, his activities, everything is his services are all based on that mood. So that's the Sarup. So when they say Sarup Siddhi, it actually means you are actually now engaged in Krishna's service. But the mundaners think that Sarup Siddhi means I now have a spiritual form and it has this quality, that quality, and all this. But they're not thinking about it in the context of service. You know, they'll say yes, and I'll do this service and I'll do that service. But it's all about themselves. It's not about attraction to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so it still has that object that they're just absorbed in that, their position. So that's what happens is when you don't see your position properly as servant of the Lord, then all these fundamental illusions come up. So that's why the Mayavadis think they are God, and no activity. And then the Sahajiyas thinks it's all about their activities and that, but it's not about God. So in both of them, they're not actually dealing with God as a person. Right? So one is that it's the situation of all the things I'll do. The other one is there's no situation, there's nothing. So they're both just dealing on that platform of sat. They're both an illusion. Though they say, oh, I'll do this and I'll do that. But the point is you're not there. You're not qualified. So you can't do all those things. So what's the point of you thinking like that? And that's why our line is Rag Anuga or Rup Anuga. We follow in the footsteps of those who are doing. So we think about how they're doing these nice activities. We don't think about ourselves doing these activities. Right? Means activities we can do. Like we may think, okay, I can do this in my service, I could do this to improve or that, or, okay, we're going to have a festival, so then let's do this, 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 this. You know, so that's contemplating within what is your service. But the others, then they're contemplating what someone else's service and claiming it's their own. That's Mayavad. It's not their service. You know, Rupa Goswami's doing this, Vishwanath's doing this, or that, by doing that, and then saying, yeah, I'll do that. No, they're already doing that. They don't need you to do that. They're already doing it. You know, does that make sense? You know, it's like everybody, you know, getting involved in the same thing. You know, saying it's sentimental, so it's not necessary.
It is making a mess.
Yes, yes. You know, if like five people try to serve you the same preparation at the same time with the same spoon, you know, everyone's holding and that, and no, turn it like this. No, like this, like that, and like that. No, we get more. You know, it's a waste of time. So we can see is that it's very, very simple is that we think of Krishna in our natural position. Right, that's favorable, and so then that becomes then actual devotional service, pure devotional service. We have some motive in all that, then it's not pure devotional service. It'll be mixed devotional service, right? And if it's about actually that material, you know, or that particular action and result, and not so much about Krishna, but you know, you're willing to include Krishna, then that becomes, like we said, Bhakti Mr. Karma instead of Karma Mr. Bhakti. Right? Karma Mr. Bhakti is for those who are aspiring as the pure devotional service, though they may not be working on that platform, but they're aspiring for that. Though they may forget, but that's actually their goal. Because if you talk to them, they'll say, this is what I want. Right? But for others, it's actually no, they want the results of their karma, but they're willing to include the Lord within that process, you know, knowing he's the big guy, he's the big boss, you know, just like you're willing to include the particular local, let's say, you know, government personnel, you know, in the accomplishment of your desire. You know, you'll go to them and fill out the papers or get things signed or get things approved, and you'll do that. But it's not about them. It's just they're part of the system. You understand? So, let's say you're making a house. And so then in making the house, you have to get your plans approved, right? So then you go to an architect, you go to an engineer, you know, you have the plans, you go down to whoever is the authority who can sanction it, get it sanctioned. But you couldn't care less ultimately about the engineer, the architect, or the person, the officer who's sanctioned. For you, it's just about getting your house done. And they're just a necessary part. So you're pious. You're willing to follow the rules. Well, someone who's impious just starts to build something like that. And then you find out that the government comes along and says, you can't do this. Like there was one guy, I think it was in China. Every day when he would go up, he lived on the top floor or something, or, you know, or the roof or something of a big apartment building. I mean, really tall, one of those, you know, 20, 30 story kind of things. So then every day when he'd go up, he'd take a bucket of dirt. And he had this huge garden with, you know, full-size trees and everything like that. So in the beginning, no one notices because he'd like this and that. It's small. But after a time, you see there's a jungle on the roof like that. And then, you know, it comes to someone's attention, the government comes and checks and finds out the guy's got, you know, a few tons of dirt up there. It's bad for the building. So it all had to be taken out. So that's not following the rules. Right. And the other, so that's the impious, that's vikarma. And then karma, then you're willing to follow the rules. So if that includes God, you're willing to acknowledge God and his authority. It's not a problem. We acknowledge the government says, stop at the red light, go with the green light. You know, if it says here, no right turn, we don't turn right. You know, we acknowledge that. We may not like it. We have to go to the next block and then come back around. And it's always really annoying. You know, it's just like, all you have to do is go up here and go here and you're at the place. But because of the one-way streets, you have to go up, you know, here and then that goes over here and that'll back that and this and that. And finally you get there. You know, it takes you 20 minutes when it would have only taken you 2 minutes, you know. So, but you do it because that's the way it is. So that's the karmis, you know, those who are theistic, that they acknowledge at least some level of the Lord. They accept the laws of God like that. So that's the point. And then the impersonalists, then they give up that kind of morality, and they exclusively think about God as impersonal, and that they're God. And that's in principle how they got themselves in the material world, though they're not thinking of themselves as God. Krishna saves them thinking that they're God, the person. That becomes really offensive, that they think they're Brahman, they are Brahman, and that they are absorbed in Brahman. Then that's annoying, but because they aren't the full Brahman, but at least they're just looking at I'm Brahman, and here's the supreme Brahman, and then we're together. So they avoid the personal thing. So people who get involved in person, in thinking that they're God and imitating, then in the Krishna book, Prabhupada points out, then that their life is shortened very seriously. Right? So in that way, they are engaged in things, but the Vedic culture then restricts so that they can follow their mundane consciousness, but not to the point where they destroy themselves. That's what the Veda. So Vikarma means you don't care about those things. And so then there, that's where destruction comes up. Right? So simply you remember Krishna and you're on the spiritual platform. Forget Krishna, you're on the material platform. Right? But as Prabhupada points out, then there's a very developed, sophisticated science on how you can change that consciousness and make it permanent. Right? Yeah. This conception has no meaning, just as there's no meaning to seeing one's head being cut off. This is the process by which knowledge is covered. And because this artificial rebellious condition of the living entity gives him all troubles, it is to be understood that he should take to his normal life as a devotee of the Lord and be relieved from the misconception of being God. The so-called liberation of thinking oneself God is that last reaction of avidya by which the living entity is entrapped, right? So the thing that started, you mean the point of where avidya starts, right? That I want to be the controller and enjoyer, then Maya, so you've moved down to here. Maya is so clever that she makes you think that this point is the point where I'll be liberated. All it is you're freed from all this, but you're still within her clutches. Right? Because avidya starts at thinking I am God. So that's how Prabhupada said, we become envious of Krishna. That's how it starts. So they're saying, so Maya is saying, you know, by, you know, be envious of Krishna, and that will free you from the material entanglement. So, you know, you have to admit she's good. She knows what she's doing. She's very effective. The conclusion is that the living entity deprived of eternal transcendental service to the Lord becomes illusioned in many ways. Even in his conditional life, he is the eternal servant of the Lord. Right, so he's still servant. He's still serving Krishna indirectly through serving his Maya. But because he doesn't see it in connection with Krishna, he gets no benefit from that. Right, he doesn't get any spiritual benefit because that's not his intention. This servitude under the spell of illusory Maya is also a manifestation of his eternal condition of service. Because he has rebelled against the service of the Lord, he is therefore put in the service of Maya. He is still serving, but in a perverted manner. When he wants to get out of service under material bondage, he next desires to become one with the Lord, right? So then he thinks it's the service is the problem. He's serving material energy, so I'll stop that service and I'll become God. But that's how you got in. You were doing service, but then the mentality went to, I'll do that service for my pleasure. So it's about service is meant for my pleasure. So they drop that spiritual side and then get into the mundane. And so the Mayavadis just go back to that original point. So in other words, the Mayavadis' whole, what do you call it? Position, the philosophy, is cultivating the original or the primordial sin or the original sin. You know, it's like Mayavadis say, yes, when you eat the apple, you become God. You know, that's all. So it's kind of like, no. When you offer the apple to God, that's when you become servant, like that. So it's a real trick. Maya is very clever. Okay, when he wants to get out of service under material bondage, he next desires to become one with the Lord. This is another illusion. Best course, therefore, is to surrender unto the Supreme, and thus get rid of the illusory Maya for good, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. 7:14. Daivi hiesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:7:10 purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. The jiva situated behind the Lord with beginningless aversion loses knowledge by beginningless ignorance, which is also situated behind the Lord. There's no cause and no purpose for the jiva doing this. This is the nature of tamas, that it eclipses the power of the jiva, who has only small power. Right? So there is, it's beginningless our aversion, it's beginningless our ignorance. So there's no real purpose to it. But somehow or another, we think it's very, very important. So all he has to do is come back to his natural position. Yes, sir. Something? Or it's just you're taking turns sitting in the chair.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Because of Maya, the loss of knowledge and bliss, Atma Viparyaya of the Jiva, Pumsam, appears to be without cause or goal, Artena. Medini says that Arta means object of the senses. Wealth, cause, thing, meaning of a word, prevention, and goal. An example is given. The seer of a dream, Drashtuhu, near himself, Upa, sees his head cut off. Though his head is intact, in the dream state, he experiences that his head is gone. Though the jiva does not actually have a destruction of knowledge and bliss, in a state of ignorance, he perceives this destruction. The brilliant luster of gold and silver is not lost by darkness, but is only covered. Just as the very brilliant ruby destroys even darkness, the life of the devotee destroys even ignorance. From the second explanation of the previous verse, it is incorrect to think that there is bondage of ignorance for the Supreme Lord. Paramatma. For the Supreme Lord, Paramatma, full of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, who is omniscient and all-pervading. The idea that Paramatma by ignorance becomes Jivatma, and by the disappearance of ignorance becomes Paramatma, is false. Right? Because they have this thing of that you have the ignorance, avidya, and then you have vidya. So when you have proper knowledge, you become Paramatma. And then when you have ignorance, then you're the Jiva. But the difficulty comes is that in their philosophy, even Paramatma is still within illusion. So how is that, you know, special? You know what I'm saying? If they're accepting that preeminent position of the Lord, then that's nice. But then they say that they are the Lord. But the point is, the Shastra says that the Lord is never covered by this material energy. So how do they come up with this idea? It's only mental speculation. The Shastra says clearly he is never covered. He is always in control. He's never under that influence. He's always beyond. You know, he's there before all this. He's there after all this. But they will speculate that, no, but if I come under, then he must come under. You know, if I have this problem, he must have this problem. Because they think everything from their own perspective. And so then it's due to their mental speculation and word juggling that they come up with this idea, though the Shastra very clearly says it never happens. So that means then their idea of Paramatma is not actually the real position. And so Paramatma is then beyond Brahman. Like that. But they get us all mixed up.
Maharaj, can we say actually in this world there are the devotee and the demon? There is nothing between.
The devotees and the demons.
The demon means we come to the material world because we want to envy Krishna to be God, so it's demoniac mentality.
Yeah, it is. It is. So that's why the demigods are considered deva.
Yes.
Because they recognize the authority of the Lord. But we see with Indra, they may forget.
Yes.
Or like Nalakuvara and Manigriva, they forget. But as soon as it's brought up, they're awakened to that. You know, it's just like Indra's fighting with Dhritarasura and he forgets the Lord's instructions. So he attacks Dhritarasura with his club. And Dhritarasura just with his left hand, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, he grabs his club. When he takes his club and whacks him and his elephant. And so then when that happens, then Indra drops the thunderbolt. And then Dhritarasura is telling him, says, the Lord told you to use the thunderbolt in your fight against me. So where's your faith? You know, you're a demigod. You're serving under the Lord. Why don't you have faith? So if you have faith, pick up that thunderbolt and fight. Right, so they can forget. So basically, that's what it is. There's the devotees and the demons. Demon simply means not interested in the Lord. And devotee means it is interested in the Lord. But you may see is that the devotees may, you know, sometimes not be so absorbed and that the demons can become absorbed.
Yes.
Yeah. So birth is not a restriction because the soul, all souls are naturally servant to the Lord. Yeah, so that's why in the Gita it has the divine and demoniac power mentalities, right? It doesn't say the divine, the demoniac, the SJWs, the woke, you know, it doesn't go on like that. You know, it's one or the other. Are you acknowledging God and God's laws? Or are you not? Right? So even we see that, you know, some of the higher grade demons, they accept the laws of God because they know things work better. But they couldn't care less about God. So there's no devotion and all that. So they're pious by the material standard. So that's the thing. Even the demons can follow the material standard of piety, you know, like you see Genghis Khan, then there was some big battle and two, I think, lieutenants of the other, you know, general had defected and come over to Genghis's side and gave information and everything. And by that, then Genghis Khan was able to win the battle, you know. And then afterwards, I'm not exactly sure of full details, but basically then he told his men to kill these two, you know, defectors. And so then, someone brought up that, no, but they came over and by, you know, their information, we were able to win and this and that, blah, you know, then they, you know, they should be given nice position and everything like that. But then Genghis pointed out is no, if they could become traitors to their own, you know, general, their own leader, why won't they become, you know, against us? If, in other words, if they see the other party might win, then they'll go over and help them win and then get the benefits. So therefore, he was saying that it's against the rules to go against your leader. So on that basis, they were executed. Right, so even there, you see those who are not so interested in all these things, then they may follow the moral principles, because the moral principles make things work. That's what they're for. Morality makes the social system function. That's what it's for. When people get so much into morality, morality is what makes the Varnashram system work mechanically. Mm-hmm. You know, because the morality brings about the overall benefit for everybody.
Yes.
You know, if the brahmachari studies and gets trained, it makes benefit for everybody. The grihastha does their duties and that, and gives them charity. That works for everybody. The vanaprasthas, then they you know, give advice and direction and support. That helps everybody. The sannyasis preach, you know, so, you know, same in the ashram, I mean, in the varnas. And so that's the whole point, is that's morality. That's what it's for. But so then that means the highest principle of morality is to do things to serve the Lord, because if you serve the Lord, then everybody's satisfied. So if the idea of morality is a greater group, you know, the more accommodating the morality, the greater the group gets the benefit, right? So the selfish person just follows his own ideas. He doesn't have any morality. It's just what works for him, right? The pranamoya will say, no, we have to, you know, expand that to include the society. We shouldn't be so self-centered, right? But then again, it still is not, it only that particular society, because they're only trying to benefit human society at the expense of all the others, right? You know, and then you come up more as, no, you have to acknowledge that the universal laws and everything like that, as that's given by the Lord. And so then that way everybody, because then what you're doing will benefit you, it'll benefit the demigods, it'll benefit everybody like this, so the universal will go more nicely. But ultimately, the point you're doing that for is because you'll benefit. Mm-hmm. You know, so it still has like that. And then you go as, oh, yes, you can do all that, but you just continue in the cycle of samsara. So what's the point? So then you should just give that up. And then there's impersonal realization. Right. And then from there, it just goes around again. So when you see is that performing your activities to please the Supreme Lord, that's the real morality. That's the real self-realization. That's the real social benefit. That's the real personal benefit. Then that means that's a proper understanding. Everything else means you haven't really understood. Is that, yeah?
It's not, yes.
From the second explanation of the previous verse, it is incorrect to think that there is bondage of ignorance for the Supreme Lord. Okay, we just did that. But even the bondage by ignorance of the jiva, who is the tathasta shakti, the Lord, a particle of consciousness, having consciousness like the Lord, but being different since he is a particle with incomplete knowledge, is unreal. This verse then describes the nature of the bondage, the same as explained above. Purusham. Pumsam refers to the jiva, not to the paramatma, who is the witness of all jivas. Okay, so then the point is the jiva is saying all this. One jiva witnesses another. He's the Supreme Lord, then he sees all. And so then the particle is, let's see. He's different. With incomplete is not real means this point is no, but because they'll try to make the difference too much. In other words, they make the oneness too much, or they make the difference too much. The point is they can't do that. They have to balance it. Is that the jivas is the Lord's energy, so he's non-different, but at the same time he's endowed with individual consciousness. So he's different. So him is, that is difference. Therefore, he acts on the platform of where he and the Lord are the same. Right? Just like if you're friends, you have common interest because of common qualities. And those qualities are used in common endeavors for common results. So now you as an individual are acting in a way within the context of what's common. So in other words, interaction is based on what's common. The interaction is based on the oneness that you are endeavoring, is because you're an individual, because of the difference. If you're one, then what does it mean? You know, it's like this, you know. Oh, you know, oh yeah, here, I'd like to give you this and that. Oh, you're so kind. Thank you very much. You know, like that and that. Oh yeah, don't mention it and all that. Yeah, see you later. Yeah, yeah, hi, Bo, you know. What's the point? You know what I'm saying? So it's because there's two. That's why there's interaction. Okay, I have two hands. Okay, but you know, still it just, that's not enough. You know? So the point is that the living entity acts because he's different, but he's acting based on what's common. That's the whole point, is you have to have, that's how everything goes on. You function, you know, perform an activity in the context of something else that's similar, but it's different. You know, like you have a hammer and a nail. They go together. But because they're different, then there's action. There's interaction. There's endeavors. There's results. Does that make sense? So the two go together, the oneness and the difference. That's why that's the original philosophy. Does that make sense? Because that's actually how everything functions. All these others are giving an aspect of that that is enough to function, but it's not actually the basis, because if you understand Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva, all the other philosophies now make sense. But otherwise on their own, they'll think, oh, well, this is this and that's that. And no, but it's all that, all there is you can't act in oneness unless there's difference. And you can't act in difference unless there's oneness. So the two go together because it's personal. Right? Yeah. And it's only through action that there's happiness. Existence isn't happiness. Does that make sense? Because of Maya, yet, although it is without purpose in past, present, and future, artena vina api, like Maya has no purpose. It means whatever is done in Maya has no purpose because it gets nothing done. You know, it's just like kids playing. Do they ever accomplish anything? No, it's just an experience. Nothing has ever gotten done. So there's no purpose. Right? The jiva forgets his identity and thinks he is something else. Atma viparyaya. This is the meaning. In a dream, it is perceived by the jiva, upa drashtuhu, that his head is cut off, which is impossible. His head has not been cut off, and no one has seen this take place. But the Lord's Maya, accomplishing this, imposes the display upon the jiva, right? So Maya is able to accomplish this and make the jiva think his head's been cut off, and then he's looking at that. Maya matram tu karsh nyayana bivakta bivyakta sarupatvat. The cause of dreams is the Lord's Maya, because the dreams by nature are not revealed to everyone. Brahma Sutra 323. Did you get that on the, what is it, the two pages before? Where was that? Yeah, page 21, then in that second verse or whatever it is, the one with Sanskrit, it says, Maya, being ashamed, cannot stand before the Lord. It says, B, 2747.
Okay, Maharaj.
What's the B? I mean, I know it comes after A and it's before C.
Oh.
Or it buzzes Srimad around. Bhagavatam, Maharaj. Okay, so yeah, you just need to put an S there.
Yes. Okay.
It's either the S, an S before that, then a Srimad Bhagavatam, or an S after that, and then it's Brahma Sutras, right? So an S has to be added.
Yes.
Okay. Next, the sage Maitreya answers the question, how is it possible for the jiva, possessing pure knowledge, to become covered by the ignorance of Maya? End quote. He explains that just as the reflection of the moon perceived in water appears to be quivering, though the original moon is fixed, similarly, the conditioned jiva appears to be suffering because of his identification with matter through the pure jiva, though the pure jiva is a possessor of knowledge and bliss. Right? If you focus on the water, whatever happens to the water, then you'll think that that's happening. You know, oh, the waves, you know, it's trembling. Oh, I'm trembling. You know, or it's sloshing around, or I'm sloshing around, you know, all that kind of stuff. Anucheta 92. Is there some music playing there? And now and again, the music stops, then you guys get up and move like that. No? Okay. Because we can't hear the music, so that's why we're not changing places. So, or you guys hear the music, but you don't care and you just keep sitting in your own place? Or... No? Okay. So, Anucheta 92. Though the jiva is pure, he takes on the quality of upadis because of the upadis. This is illustrated with an example, right? Because they're saying there's no cause, there's no beginning. So he takes on the quality of the upadis because of the upadis. You can say it doesn't make sense. Exactly. You know, that's the whole point. It doesn't make sense. But because we've accepted it, therefore that's what goes on. And then within that doesn't make any sense. Now we talk logic. You know, and when we talk transcendence, because it doesn't match into our concept of it doesn't make sense, it actually makes sense, we'll say, oh, that's not logical. Right? Because what doesn't make sense, we discuss logic based on that. If it makes sense, then that's not logical. That's the material world. The qualities belonging to the subtle body do not belong to the Atma, but appear to be so, just as the trembling quality in the water imposed on the reflection of the moon is not the trembling of the moon, though it appears to be so. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.7.11, right? So the trembling is from the water, not from the moon, but we think it's the moon is trembling. So that's the things we think the soul is, that we think we're suffering, but we're not suffering. Right? Because we're not the body. Does that make sense? Yeah. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Soul, the personality of Godhead, is compared to the moon in the sky. And the living entities are compared to the reflection of the moon on water. The moon in the sky is fixed and does not appear to quiver like the moon on the water. Actually, like the original moon in the sky, the moon reflected on the water should also not quiver. But because of being associated with water, the reflection appears to be quivering, although in actual fact, the moon is fixed. Right? So the living entity being part and parcel of the Lord, being that aspect of the reflection there, then they are like the Lord, fixed, but because they're associating with the water that the moon is reflected in, then they identify with that and then they move. So when the jiva identifies with material energy, they move. When the jiva identifies with the Lord, they're fixed. So, yeah. No. Similarly, the living entities appear to be tainted by material qualities like illusion, lamentation, and miseries, although in the pure soul, such qualities are completely absent. The word pratiyate, which means apparently and not actually, like the experience of having one's head cut off in a dream, is significant here. The reflection of the moon on the water is the separated rays of the moon and not the actual moon. The separated parts and parcels of the Lord entangled in the water of material existence have the quivering quality, whereas the Lord is like the actual moon in the sky, which is not at all in touch with water. The light of the sun and the moon reflected on matter makes the matter bright and praiseworthy. Living symptoms are compared to the light of the sun and the moon, illuminating material manifestations like trees and mountains. The reflection of the sun or moon is accepted as the real sun or moon by less intelligent men. And the pure monistic philosophy develops from these ideas. So they think that the reflection is the moon, and in that way they will become the moon. So that's the difficulty, is they're coming up with all these different ideas and theories, which in actuality have nothing to do with reality. But, you know, they're quite convinced about it. But it doesn't actually have any meaning here. So the living entity, as soon as he understands that he's not all these things, right, that's then when things start working properly for the living entity. But as long as he thinks that he is, you know, he identifies as either the water, or thinks that being the reflection, he is the moon, then all his problems start. So that's the position of the living entities. Does that make sense? So we can see is that it's such a nice example that we see that the example has been used in two different aspects. You know, it means it's that we're focusing on that we're talking about the moon. And so the moon is when it's reflected on there, then you get that aspect of the consciousness that we identify with the water. But the other is then it's showing how the Lord is there, and then the living entity, and how then associating with the water, therefore you get the movement, when in actuality, then the nature of the living entity, you know, is that to be fixed, like the moon. But they are just a ray of the moon. They're not the actual moon itself. Right? So we see is how nicely the example has been used in a few different ways. Yeah. In fact, the light of the sun and moon are actually different from the sun and moon themselves. Although they are always connected, the light of the moon spread throughout the sky appears to be impersonal. But the moon planet, as it is personal, and the living entities on the moon planet are also personal. In the rays of the moon, different material entities appear to be comparatively more or less important. The light of the moon on the Taj Mahal appears to be more beautiful than the same light in the wilderness, although the light of the moon is the same everywhere. Due to being differently appreciated, it appears different. Similarly, the light of the moon, Lord, is equally distributed everywhere, but due to being differently received, it appears to be different. One should not therefore accept the reflection of the moon on the water as actual and understand the whole situation through monistic philosophy. The quivering quality of the moon is also variable. When the water is standing still, there's no quivering. The more settled conditioned soul quivers less. Due to material connection, the quivering quality is more or less present everywhere. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.7.11 purport. Is that, yeah? So depending on what it is, the light's everywhere, but depending on where it goes, you'll say this is important, that's not important, and all that. But it's all, the Lord is equal with everyone and everything, you know. But then we'll make that distinction on what's important or not, right? Means the Vedas may establish, but for us, it's when we accept it, then it becomes important, right? Otherwise, for the Lord, it's him. These are just expansions of his potency and of his, his potency and his feature as Brahman spread everywhere. But then we, identifying with it, we take this is important, that's not important. We don't see it in the context of Krishna. So Krishna's what's important. So if he's lighting everything up, that's what's important. But we think what's being lit is important. Does that make sense? It means we're going walking around seeing everything and thinking this is important, not this I do or that I don't. But the point is why can you see? Because of the sun. So actually it's the sun that's important. The sun makes everything able to be appreciated. So everything that we see is because there's sun. If there's no sun, then there's all this stuff would not be here. It's all transformations of the sun. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam 3711 purport. Okay, no, that's okay, the end of today. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare, Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.